Hey guys, this is Jennifer from the Shooter's Mindset, and we are live with episode 425. Got our co-host tonight, Corey. How's it going?
Man, Jen, you always freak me out. I'm always worried who you're going to call on first. No,
Why are you so
I'm
sad?
good.
It's not a
I'm
hard
good.
question.
Yeah. Hey, I didn't shoot a match this weekend.
What? Are you sick?
No, I just practiced.
No matches?
No matches.
That's crazy. Something's wrong with
It was
you.
Thanksgiving. It was Thanksgiving.
Goodness gracious. That's more time to shoot, right?
Yeah, surely there was something somewhere.
And our other co-host tonight, we've got Greg Cannon. How's it going?
Oh, it's pretty crazy. Just getting ready to head up to AG Cup.
I know. We're like running around like chickens with our head cut off, and we're not even shooting it. So. And then speaking of the AG Cup, so this show is going to be about AG Cup. We wanted to do a show to kind of ramp up, and we thought, what better way to talk about AG Cup than to have one of the past winners of AG Cup? So we have with us tonight Austin Orgain. How's it going, Austin?
Going good. Just enjoying this beautiful Oklahoma weather and trying to get through with this so I can finish load my ammo so we can leave tomorrow.
He says, keep it at an hour. I got ammo to
How's it out?
That's fine. I still got to go get some ethanol-free gas from the other side of town and pack shotguns and all the other fun toys. So, yeah.
Yeah, we got a lot to get done ourselves. So, well, for anybody that maybe doesn't know you, Austin, if they are new to PRS and don't know you, will you tell everybody a little bit about yourself, how you got into shooting, and just tell us some of your biggest accomplishments in the sport?
Okay, yeah, Austin Orgain from Oklahoma. Got into shooting fairly early. Started shooting 4-H in school programs, shot pellet, rifle pellet, pistols, some shotgun stuff. Didn't really get into long range shooting until I got out of college and started working. I was working up in Woodward, and there's a place there called Butch's Guns, and they build custom rifles and do some long range shooting, and they have some little local matches, club matches there. So I ended up getting a rifle built from them. Started shooting. They kind of helped me out and get started and kind of just took off. I mean, something that I enjoyed, something that I've invested a lot of time and energy into, and picked it up pretty fast and started having success pretty fast and kind of just snowballed from there. So I guess for accomplishments, I won the 2017 NRL. Finale and year end. That was their inaugural year, the first year that the NRL had anything going on. That was out in Vegas. That was pretty cool. Pretty cool. We stayed in a hotel in Vegas. We got to go do the whole experience, the whole Vegas thing, and then shoot a match there too. And fortunate enough to come out with the win on that one. 2018 PRS finale. I ended up second place. Matt Brazeau won that one. And then Clay won it. Then I've got two PRS championships back to back, 2020, 2021, and then an AG Cup. So I guess those would be the major accomplishments.
So nothing like super huge, just like
Yeah, nothing real big.
the biggest series of matches in the world. I mean,
Yeah,
you have
you win a few little ones here and there.
I see your big AG Cup.
Yeah, I snuck it in there. Actually, it kind of stays down here because it's big enough it doesn't fit on the shelf with the bullets. So I gotta up my shelving game and get some stuff built, I guess.
You have to build a cabinet like the high school has, that has all the trophies in it.
Yeah. Yeah, there you
Yeah.
go. Put it in the hallway.
That's right. So we are going to talk about AG Cup a lot during the show, but I also wanted to highlight they just announced the 2024 IPRF World Championship USA team, and you're on it. So how does
Yeah,
that
I squeaked
feel?
in.
How's that feel to be able to represent the USA in a big match like that?
It feels good. you know, what they're doing with that, involving it all, you know, getting all the other countries involved and getting some legitimacy in all the other countries. It's great. It's great to go represent the country. It's great to go represent, you know, all the local people here too. You know, it's going to be in a great venue. It's going to be in Cameo, Colorado. So really excited about that. Just ready to go represent. Sorry, my son just walked in trying to give me a piece of candy.
Oh, what kind? Nice.
Got a Tootsie Roll? Go back in there, bud. He's, he just hit the door. I don't know what my wife is. Anyway, sorry about that. There they are. It's been, he hasn't gotten the attention that he needs in the last couple of days trying to get ready for this match. That's what kind of sucks about it. You get to take away from some family time. But so back on the IPRF, you know, it is super exciting. You know, I kind of just squeaked in this year, but I did try pretty hard. I went hard trying to hit the matches and make the qualifications to be able to make it. And so did a lot of other guys. A lot of the other guys really pushed hard this year and really worked. And it was pretty tight, you know, amongst – you know, the top two were pretty set, but then the next four down from that were all pretty tight. I think we were only a couple points out of the whole deal separation. So it just goes to show how competitive it is now and how good everybody's getting.
That's right. You think y'all all kind of get together and train to get ready for this together as a team? I think in Italy it was a different feel. I feel like people were kind of working together, some dry firing at the house together and stuff.
Yeah. So I mean, you know, maybe some of the guys around here, but you know, logistically it'd be pretty hard for us to all to get together and do any kind of training. So we'll probably just kind of do what we always do and do our own thing and go in being ready. Cause obviously we want to win the team aspect, but at the end of the day, it still is an individual competition. And even though we're teammates, we want to beat the guy right beside us. So.
Yeah. Fair enough. So I know Jen and Greg have been getting a lot of stuff together, and I know you've been getting practice in loading ammo. It's your fourth AG Cup, is that right?
So this is the fifth AG Cup, right? 2019 was the first year.
Okay. And you've shot all of them?
So I've shot all of them out. This will be my fifth one.
Okay.
Yeah, that'd be right. There's two at Arena, two at K&M, and this one's the fifth one.
Gotcha. Okay. So for people that don't know, what makes it so much different than every other match? And I know it's gone through a lot of formats, but maybe this particular format, like, why is it so much different than your normal 100-plus shooter match?
Well, I mean, one, obviously there's not near as many shooters. You know, I think there's 30 or so of us shooting. Probably the biggest aspect of it is we're not allowed to talk to each other as far as wind or strategy or stage setup, gear setup, anything like that. So it's just figuring it out on your own before and during the stage. I've never shot at Clinton. I don't know much about it. I don't know how the wind is there. At Arena, the wind was a factor, right? Because we couldn't talk to each other. We couldn't do it. And there was quite a bit of wind there the 2 years that we shot there. But K&M was a little bit different in that, because not that there's not some wind at K&M, but most of the time it doesn't carry very much value. So even though we weren't allowed to talk about wind or anything, it really wasn't that much of an advantage or disadvantage to anybody, just because there's not a lot of wind value there. I remember back on the first year that we shot AG Cup, everybody was so afraid to talk to each other or even say anything on day one, because it was just, you know, very explicitly said to us that if we talk or caught talking about wind, caught talking about strategy, anything like that, you're just automatically DQ'd and that's it, you're done.
Yeah.
So like everybody just kind of set away from each other, didn't talk to each other. And at the end of day one, we were all like, man, that kind of really stunk. We didn't get to have any fun. We didn't get to cut it up and laugh. And so everybody really loosened up on day two, and we just, you know, cut it up and talk crap to each other like we always do. We just tried to make it a point to not, you know, involve any wind calls or anything like that in it.
Yeah, because that's, I mean, that's a huge part of why guys go to matches, right? Is to go with their friends to hang out, because you could see someone, you know, on the other side of the country that you haven't seen in maybe a year. So it,
Yeah, for sure.
is it now you can talk about basically anything except the match itself?
Yeah, I mean, you can't talk any win, you can't talk any strategy, anything like
Okay.
that. But we can talk about what we ate for Thanksgiving dinner, what the plans for dinner that night was or whatever. The very first one they did, they tried to set up in stages to where we were in separate tents if we had shot and not shot the
Okay.
stage, and then each squad was separate as well. So you didn't even get to talk to the guys. You didn't get to see the guys after they shot the stage until after you shot the stage. And we still weren't supposed to talk about anything after the stage. So
Right.
some of that kind of went away. I mean, there's enough of us around and enough of us, typically everybody that is kind of shooting at this level, and there's enough ROs and other guys around and enough guys with enough virtue to where we just, no, we can't talk about it. We don't talk about it.
Right.
So,
Does the money
awful.
play a big factor at all?
I think the first couple of years it really did. That first AG Cup going in, I think everybody was pretty tight and nervous and obviously not being able to talk to each other. Stage wins, things like that. And kind of what I've found is if you try to shoot fast and try to go for stage wins, they don't too usually happen. Usually you rush a shot or pull a shot.
Right.
And if you're going into it just trying to be smooth and get all your hits, you'll win a lot more stages than actually trying to win stages. So that's kind of what I do going in. I know a couple of years ago, I made a mistake on day one of trying to win some stages, trying to go for it, take the pressure off. Because once you get a stage or two won, there's not much pressure because as far as financially, it kind of covers your trip and covers your entry fee.
Right, because it is pretty
Because we
expensive to
do have a
go.
lot of it. Yeah, by the time this year comes or this part of the year comes around, we're pretty financially invested into this. So that takes some pressure off. And it kind of is inversely adds pressure if you don't win a stage or two on the first day. You kind of feel like you're getting behind, and then the pressure is kind of on. You start trying to push on stages, and that typically doesn't work. Usually if you're just shooting well and everything's flowing is when those stage wins come.
It was funny a couple years ago at Arena. I'll never forget watching y'all shoot the PRS Barricade, and people were getting out their tripods and putting bipods on their gun and going super slow, trying to get all of their hits. They didn't care about time. They were like, I don't care. I'm not trying to. And then you had the other half that was like really trying to win the stage. And so, like,
Yeah.
somebody would shoot it, and it was like, oh, 36 seconds is what you got to beat, and everybody's over there trying to see who is going to win it. So it's funny the two different mindsets.
Yeah, well, and it probably kind of depends on how the match is going up to that point and where you're standing at that point, because like, what if you needed to really hit all your targets to be able to make it to day three, or you're setting well to win the first 2 days, then you're going to go in with a mindset of, I just got to hit all the targets. I don't care about the time. Whereas maybe you're on the bubble, or you're not going to win the first 2 days. Thanks, bud. Anybody need a sucker?
I do.
Yeah, you go. You're not going to win. You're not going to win the first 2 days, but you're pretty well secured into day three. Then maybe you push on that stage a little bit and try to win. There's guys that shoot the PRS Barricade so fast anymore, and everybody's got the footwork down, the movement down, the trigger pulls down, that most of the time, unless you've practiced it a lot, you're not going to shoot it faster than those guys anyway. So you might as well just slow down and get your hits, especially on something like that, because you're not so much worried about the tiebreaker on that. You're just trying to
Right.
get into the third day at that point. And so you're just going to get your hits and do it. Unless you have nothing to lose, then you just go burn it down until you miss a shot. And then once you miss a shot, you slow down and get the rest of the hits. So.
So do you think that it has gotten easier? The match has gotten easier. I know the elephant in the room is that Ben cleaned the whole match last year, right? And Tom said that will never happen again. But do you think that it was an easier match? Do you think it was just familiarity at K&M?
I think I wouldn't call it an easy match because I didn't think it was an easy match. I didn't, you know, day three, I didn't think was super difficult, but I would not have said that that was a day that somebody would have cleaned, right? I would not imagine somebody cleaning that. Ben just shot extremely well. You know, Ben's a great shooter and he was locked in. I don't think, and I don't want anybody to take this wrong way, I don't think the match had gotten any easier. I think the venue got a little bit easier because, and this is why, because K&M is set up really well. It's set up really nice. They have really solid props to shoot off of. They have solid barricades, whereas Arena, we shot off a lot wobblier stuff, you know, not necessarily concrete in the ground stuff, you know, some older wooden stuff. And then so some of those stages weren't as concrete. And then there is the wind factor, right? You know, whereas at Arena on some long range stuff, you know, we were holding a mill and a half. I distinctly remember winning a stage holding a mill six. And K&M, when the whole time, the whole 2 years that we've shot the AG Cup at 10M, I probably never held more than four tenths anywhere. Yeah. And that's just, you know, it's just the venue it's at. I don't necessarily think it's an easier match because they did a really good job setting it up. The targets were small. The movement was difficult. But when you shoot off really solid stuff and not very much wind, then your hit percentages are just going to be higher.
Yeah. I mean, if for anyone, we've all shot at K&M, but for anyone that hasn't, it really is kind of the standard for what you would expect a high level range to have. Like you're saying, everything is covered for the most part. Everything is concreted into the ground. It's all really big, and kind of like a big range type sense for a square range. And it's pretty well manicured. I mean, the grass comes with several notes not to walk certain places, right?
And don't you ever even think about driving on it.
That's right. But it's a super nice facility, and I love going and shooting there. It's just a fact of the matter is it's hard to get separation there. It's hard.
Yeah.
It's really hard to make people miss, even with super small targets, because I think back the first year we had it at K&M, I remember we shot the stage off of the truck, off the big dump truck, and it was a bowling pin stage. And I looked at it, and our biggest target was one MOA, and most of them were like half MOA. It's like, gosh, these are so small, and there was like seven people cleaned it. So that it couldn't have got much more difficult as far as target size.
Yep.
But people were still hitting it just because, you know, like I say, if the wind holds and is not blowing really hard there, it's hard to make people miss.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. And it's like, you know, you can make the target smaller and smaller and smaller, but then you can't make them too small where it's just pure luck of the draw. You know, if everybody's gun shooting a half MOA and, you know, you're like, okay, we're going to use quarter MOA targets, then that's pure just luck. So you got to approach something a little differently to add to the challenge.
I do think the shooters are becoming more better. Just, you know, I think
that's a big part of it.
And the shooters getting stable, the addition of tripods, figuring out bags. I just think that
a light gun being 20 pounds.
Yeah,
that is all a big part of it. I mean, the gears came a long ways. Shooters have come a long ways. You know, everybody's getting good now. Everybody's figuring out the consistency and components and consistencies in their rifles. So, you know, everybody, like at this match, any given day, there's 20 guys that can come out and win the AG Cup on one day, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's you know, I'd say it's probably never been harder to win matches. Just because you have so many top level shooters that are showing up to a lot of matches, and you just got to bring your A game every time, and then have a little luck on your side too.
Yeah. When you look at that field, you know, there's no clear like, you know, oh, it's going to be tough to keep up with him. Oh, you know, this person doesn't stand a chance in the world. Like, it's all people that have all beat each other before.
For sure. I think there's a few guys that may have an advantage going into Clinton because there's a couple of guys that have shot the range a few times, you know, that are a little bit more local. It's hard to justify going to South Carolina from Oklahoma for a one-day match just to see what it's like. So you know, the rest of it's just bite the bullet and go in blind.
Yep. So that the Clinton house, I guess at this point in time, we'll call that my home range for center fire stuff. So yeah. I've only missed one of their matches they've had out here this year. And it's funny, you see people show up and I'm like, huh, what brings you up this way?
So, yeah.
I sure do wonder.
Although they do have a part that no one has shot.
Okay. Cool.
It's brand new.
Yep.
That would be really cool then.
There will be
so what's the secret there, Greg? What are all the secrets to this range?
Listen, I'm not smart enough to tell you this. All I know is that there's a place that they call Heartbreak Ridge, and it'll break your heart.
There you go.
There's a lot of topography out there. The farthest shots. Well, I take that back. I don't know about the farthest shots you'll take. The farthest shots that we took when I was like, where are those targets at? And I'm looking this way, and Tommy, the match director, goes, oh, they're up on the ridge over there.
Oh, okay.
But they've done an amazing job out there at that range. It was just basically an empty field with a bunch of trees at the beginning of the year. And they have, it's ridiculous, the stuff they've done. They've built a lot of really, really stable props. All of the stages are inside of landscape timbers. They got some mulch down, so it's nice on your knees. It's not so nice for finding your brass. So like a red color or something would be much easier to mark your brass with than my favorite color, lime green, because that blends right in with the mulch.
Back in my three gun days, I shot there in a hurricane. No joke. Like the
which
called because it flooded.
You might be getting, Jen. I don't know if you've looked at the weather, but it might be a little wet.
I saw what the weather's going to look like, and I think I might be coming down with some. gotta get the excuses started now.
There you go.
So we're about at the midpoint of the show. Remember, if you're watching us live on Facebook, ask any questions you may have in the comment section of the video. We'll ask it live on air. Other ways to catch us, you can always check back on the Shooter's Mindset Facebook page. Videos stay up there forever, and we usually upload to all the podcast apps the night after the show. Finally, everything eventually ends up on the Shooter's Mindset YouTube page, so that's a great place to look up past episodes. On that note, the stuff is going to be uploaded to the podcast either tonight if I'm done packing in time, or I'm not sure when, because I'm leaving straight from work to go to AG Cup tomorrow to get ready to live stream this whole match for you guys all to watch at home. So I will try and get that up there as fast as I can. And if you're hearing me now, you're probably not going to be listening to the podcast because you're listening now. Anyway, I had a call with Tom earlier today. We were going to try and get him on the show, but he's busy building what he's called the toughest match most of these guys have ever shot. He was out on the range setting targets all day. He's making some final changes to the course of fire tonight. But there was we asked him a few questions because I know some of the people that are shooting the match are kind of curious about some things. Number one, it's going to be the same format as last year. Friday and Saturday, that'll be basically a standard two-day PRS match. And the top shooters from that will make it to Sunday. They're also doing any ties will make it to Sunday in those top 10. But there will be shoot-offs for if there's any money where there's a tie, there will be shoot-offs for that. Also get your five shoot-offs is what makes AG Cup. I love
shoot-offs it. Makes everything. The old IPSC stuff with the Sweet 16 and the shoot-off at the end, that stuff was amazing. That was so much fun to see.
Jen loves shoot-offs at IPSC matches.
Jen?
You know the guy on the side of the timer box?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's who she got to shoot against.
Oh, no.
Like, literally, the buzzer went off. I shot the stage, looked over. He had shot the stage, eaten a sandwich, reset his poppers. No, it wasn't that bad, but he did smoke me. Like, before we even went, he came over and shook my hand and said, I'm sorry.
Did he start off with the beef with get some?
No. Different timer.
Oh, different timer guy. Okay.
It was Todd Jarrett.
Okay.
Let's see. Did I mention five redemption shooters? So shooters where they average in their yearly scores or their season scores, combine that with the match scores to bring some of those shooters in. So you'll have at least 15. I think last year we had 17 shooters on Sunday, shooting in two squads. Money. There is money. Similar to last year, there is $30,000 in stage prizes or stage money, with $1,000 per stage. The winner of the two-day match, so Friday and Saturday, will get $5,000. And then for the one-day finale match, there will be $30,000 for the winner, $7,000 for second, and $5,000 for third. Like we were saying before, Friday and Saturday, it's going to be on this brand new PRS range that I've been shooting all season. And I can tell you guys how to miss the targets out there. Just do whatever I do. and then Sunday, there's going to be a couple of brand new ranges that like nobody has seen. So I was out there last month shooting a match, and I asked to go over there and take a look at them so that we can get all of our Starlink, you know, make sure we got enough internet coverage to cover the area, make sure we had a spot where we could see the sky with our Starlink.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike's response was, it's literally just the woods right now. We still have to cut down the trees. So there is nothing there right now. To quote Tom, he said, unless they shot the first AG Cup, Sunday will be the hardest match they've ever shot. It's going to be all natural terrain, with very little feedback for misses, so not a whole lot of berms and backstops and stuff like that. So kind of going back to the roots of the PRS with that.
Ready to watch your own trace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Make sure you got good glass.
Yeah, that sounds interesting. I, you know, Austin, you mentioned the separation at places like K&M being kind of difficult as a match director. And I'm kind of wondering, in a match like this, what fundamental skills would you think had to be tested? Like, do you think prone shooting and positional, obviously, but do you put like an emphasis on movement as well? Like, should it be a complete test for shooters?
I think so. I think you need to test everything. I think you need to test your prone and wind calling abilities. I think you need to be able to test your movement and your positional abilities. I think you need to test your mental abilities. I think really there should be a lot of cerebral thought have to go into a stage, like, you know, not just targets 1 through 5. You have to shoot target 1, target 4, target 2, target 3, target 1, something like that, where it's a lot of it's a lot of thought process. You know, it's a mental challenge on top of everything else. Like I say, you can't predict the weather. You can't make the weather do anything. So the wind calling, I feel like I'm really good at wind calling, and I like windy type matches because I feel like I have an advantage and something like that. But you can't always create wind or anything like that in a match. So you have to plan for whether the wind blows or doesn't blow. You have to plan to be able to challenge a shooter with movement. You have to be able to challenge a shooter with brain power. You have to put thought into it. And then, you know, you can challenge a shooter with time. I think we get into this niche area of sometimes building stages that are designed to time out on.
Right.
And, you know, I don't necessarily think that's the right way to do it, because it takes the precision out of the precision rifle, right? Whenever you're just having to send shots without being able to stay and watch and see them or anything like that before you move, because you may time out, you take a little bit of the precision out. Right. But I do think there needs to be there's a delicate balance for a time stressor, right? It needs to be, you have enough time to shoot the stage if you're efficient in your movement and you're efficient in your shooting, but you still have time to make on the fly wind calls and make on the fly corrections based on what you see. So.
Yeah, so like as a top shooter, I'm assuming you know how long it takes to build a position on a certain size target at a distance, break a clean shot and see what you need to see. And you can multiply that out by the number of shots in the stage, right? So
Yeah.
time from that perspective, the match director can get from, all right, so I've got the top guy, I've got a middle guy. Theoretically, both should be able to complete it, but the top guy is going to see everything that he needs to see. And maybe that's a good balance for time. But I like how you brought
Yeah.
up the mental game, because one of my favorite stages that we've done, it was two targets, but it was D, D, B, B, D, D, B, B, D, right? And so you had two letters that sound very similar, and the targets were kind of, 30-degree pan, nothing crazy. But that mental game of moving back and forth when you had three different positions with those three different sets, it was really fun. And I think that's the thing that I like seeing in matches, is kind of just more than this is a prone stage, this is a positional stage. This is a prone stage, this is a positional stage.
I agree. I think that type of challenge makes it fun for the shooters, whether you're a top shooter or not a top shooter, right? Because
Absolutely.
you get to a stage and it's a single target engagement with a little bit of movement, and you don't really have to put a lot of thought into it. That's okay to have mixed in your matches, but I think over and over, it gets boring even for a novice shooter. It's nice to be able to go shoot matches that, or even just stages. That you actually have to put some thought into. You have to think about, you have to, you basically have to shoot that stage without making the mental mistake to have a chance to do well at the match.
Right, because one not dial, and then you've screwed up your order, and you have to get back in, and it makes it twice as hard
Yeah,
to get back
exactly.
in your
One
order.
wrong target, one no dial, forget to hold over. That's all things that are challenging for a lot of people. But I think at the end of the day, people want to do this sport and want to compete on challenging things.
So kind of changing gears to gear. Obviously, gear is a huge part of the sport, right? And I'm glad you finally listened to Keith Rudisill and switched to the quarter bore. So there's like eight questions in
How did I listen to Keith
the
Rudisill on that?
chat. Keith tried to talk me into that like 4 years ago, dude. I just had to bring it up for
Yeah, so yeah, the good old quarter board. So it got popular back, way back when, actually when Blackjack created a bullet that was viable for him.
Yeah, super
And then
slick,
obviously
131 grain, right?
the demand got hard to find them, and nobody was really making them. But then a couple of companies started making 25 bullets again. Hornady came out their 134 ELDM, and Burger came out with their 135 grain hybrids, and now all of a sudden you have this really sleek high BC bullet that doesn't quite have the recoil of a 6.5, but you can run it in windier conditions and things like that over a 6 millimeter, so you kind of have that little middle ground. Do I think it's the end all be all? No, but I do enjoy running it.
So for guys that don't know, it's like a 0.33 something G7 for the Hornady bullet, and it's 130 grain, so you're going like a slow 6.5 speed with like 2700 feet per second, more or less. Okay.
Yeah, so I'm running mine at 2740.
Okay.
It's so it's so it depends on how fast you're running your 6.5. It'd be pretty similar velocities to what you're running a 140 in your 6.5, right?
Right.
But I have actually a slightly higher BC than a 140 with less recoil. That's kind of the balance of this game, right? It's kind of a Goldilocks area of having the best performance of a bullet that you can without the recoil, so that you can spot your shots more easily, especially if you start getting in compromised positions. It's harder to spot your shots on. You want something that you can stay in the rifle, and the rifle can stay on target shot after shot, but give yourself the best ballistics advantage that you can.
Right. So for Oklahoma, right, you guys typically, I mean, you could have 40-mile-an-hour wind again, and it could be 40 degrees
Yeah.
outside, or it could be snowing. But kind of the flip side of that is what you're talking about, K&M, kind of the southeast. Again, they're pushing like guys like Keith doing a 22 dasher. So
Yeah.
do you think it's regional, or do you think it really just doesn't matter and guys should just pick something they like and shoot it?
It's, you know, even with as much data as I have and experiences I have shooting different calibers in matches, mm-hmm. in conditions, I can't definitively say that I would have or would not have won or lost any of the matches had I been shooting something else. If you have a rifle that's shooting well, especially with the current bullet setups that we have now, high BC bullets, if you have your rifle tuned up, I don't know how much it matters. I mean, I think you probably, you know, let's say shooting a 25 over a dasher. I think in a windy match, you pick up two or three shots that you hit on the edge that you might not have with the dasher, but you also probably give up two or three shots because you didn't see exactly where you hit a plate on a compromised position stage.
Sure. Yeah.
So I think probably it could sway one way or the other on some matches, but I bet overall at the end of the season, if you went back and tried, if you even had a way to tabulate it, it'd probably pretty well even out.
Yeah. I think a lot of people, it probably end up being a wash, like you're saying. But let's looking at guys kind of maybe not high end guys, but the guys getting into the sport, if they just get behind a whole bunch of different guns and find something that's good for them first and then stick with that, you think that's the way rather than switching every season?
I think so, because like for me and running the dasher, I've ran the dasher so much that it's just, that's a super easy cartridge for me.
Yeah.
I know pretty much where it's going to shoot, what velocity I need to be at, what powder charge I need to be at. So that's kind of the old trusty go-to. If I have any issues, I can go to that, but I've shot it so much and learned it so well and so comfortable with that I can go back to it anytime. There's nothing against trying out, you know, some different calibers and cartridges and stuff like that. But I would say starting out, just pick something and run it until you're super comfortable with it. And then you can kind of branch out and see if there's something that you feel like is the next latest and greatest or something that's better. I do think that a lot of guys chase the rabbit and, you know, go after, oh, the GT is better than the Creedmoor, or the Dasher is better than the GT or the Creedmoor. Guys can win with all those, right? It's not the caliber, it's the Indian behind the arrow. So pick something that you, my advice would be pick something that you can find good components for.
Yeah.
You know, anymore, there's so many good brass companies. Pick something that those brass companies offer that you can get readily available. Pick a powder that is proven that people run that you can get fairly readily available, and pick a bullet that you can get that's been consistent that people are running. I mean, realistically, watch what guys are running and you'll figure it out pretty quick what is consistent and running good and what's not, because your top level guys are not going to shoot something that is going to not allow them to put more points on the board.
Yeah, for sure. And like you were saying, it's a good time to be a shooter because a lot of things are available again, and a lot of companies are making a lot of stuff for our sport now.
And yeah, for sure.
Like, I don't think I've ever been to a match where on train up day, somebody was out there and didn't say like, oh, hey, you want to shoot my dasher so you see what a dasher's like? Like,
oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you're talking to somebody like, hey, Austin, what cartridge do you run? You know, and you're talking, more than likely, I mean, he's not going to let 100 people shoot his gun, I'm sure. But, you know, if you're really interested in a caliber, somebody will probably let you take a shot and feel what the recoil is like on that round.
Yeah, for sure.
So speaking of newer shooters that maybe are trying to find their way, what do you think is the key to growing this sport?
I think that's a pretty loaded question. I think there's several ways you can do it, but our sport has a lot of turnover, right? And I think it's probably has to do with the time investment versus reward. So if you have a guy that has invested a lot of time and money in the sport and doesn't improve, stays kind of in the middle, he's probably not going to keep shooting, other than if he's just having fun and going with his buddies. You know, I came from the rodeo world, and in the rodeo world, you have classifications. Like, say, team roping, for example, you have different classifications based on your skill level and basically who you're competing against. Probably a real more realistic thing for us would be like a barrel racing. So they have what's called like a 3D or 4D barrel racing, whereas everybody runs the same race, and then your certain time slots or your certain score slots fall into the 1D. And then, you know, X amount of seconds off of that, let's say it's half a second off of that, it falls into the 2D. And then those different tiers, let's call it, it'd be like tiers in golf, flights in golf. Those separate tiers basically have a payout or a prize table walkout, however it ends up being, to where now the guy that's having fun, that's going, but it's a pretty big financial burden on him, has a chance to win something. He doesn't have to shoot against quote unquote pros all the time. Now he can shoot against the marksman all the time. And we do have that kind of a classification system for marksman, yeah, semi-pro, pro. I just think that a little more emphasis and a little more thought and time need to be put into those classifications. Because, you know, if you hit numbers that anymore are fairly easy to hit as far as percentages or placement, then you already get bumped up to pro. And then it happens before the finale. So you may not even shoot in the same classification you went into the finale for. And I think that we're kind of there with that, but we can probably expand on the classifications and then have some sort of a reward type system for those classifications other than just the top semi-pro gets a trophy. You know, let's say your top five guys, we'll just go to prize table. For example, your top five guys get to walk the prize table, right? And then you got your next step down, which is semi-pro. And then you get three, four, five, however it ends up breaking down. Your next five guys, it would be the top guys for your semi-pro, get to break down. So now the guys that finish, you know, consistently shoot 20th, 25th or whatever, that normally are down the line a little bit, now get to get bumped up, and now they get rewarded for shooting well amongst their peers and equal skill level.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea. Do you think that applies to the divisions as well? Not splitting the divisions out into classes, but I mean, production and gas gun are pretty different from open.
Yeah, for sure. I do think so. So think of it this way: if you had to go, let's think about a golf. You know, golf is pretty relatable to a lot of people. If you had to go play in a tournament and you had to play against, you know, Jordan Spieth and Tiger Woods, how many times are you going to go enter that? How many times are you going to put up your money to go enter that tournament? Right, not very many, because they're going to stomp all over you all the time. Yeah. Well, the shooting is kind of the same deal. How many times are you willing to put up your money to go donate to quote unquote the pros? Whereas golf is a huge industry, right? It's a huge sport because you don't have to go compete against them. You can go to your local club championship and you can get in, you can compete in flight two or flight three or whatever, and you're competing against more people of your skill level and not having to try to get in and beat a pro.
Yeah.
And so that's what grows it. That's what grew, you know. You look back 20 years ago on the team roping before the classifications, and you know, you'd have a handful of guys here and there that would rope. And what ended up happening is guys that go win all the time just quit getting invited or quit getting allowed to enter because they were winning and beating everybody and nobody was having fun. Well, so then they came out with a classification system, and now team roping is a huge industry as well. Barrel racing, same way on the D's. You're not going to go run against NFR quality horses in a barrel racing and put up your money every time for it, because you're very rarely ever going to beat them. But if you have a chance to get in that 2D, 3D, 4D, and you have something, you've got your skin in the game, and now you can get some of that skin back, I think you can grow the sport a lot more and keep the turnover rate lower than what it is.
Yeah, I agree with you on the turnover rate. We're seeing about 2 years. And I do agree that coming from USPSA, for example, I think the classification has the potential to give shooters achievable discrete goals throughout their entire progression as a shooter. So I personally stayed in USPSA because of the classifications originally, because I thought it was cool that I could have kind of a stepwise progression coming from martial arts where you had that same thing.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I think there's, you know, obviously there'd be some kinks to work out and there would be some growing pains with it, which we're still a growing industry and a growing sport, but we have to find a way to keep people in the sport and keep wanting to go to grow the sport.
Right. Growth is a combination of attrition and new shooters. It's not just new shooters.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
So are you still teaching classes?
Yeah, I'm still doing JTAC classes. We are finalizing a schedule for 2024. We're going to come out with three or four dates for the whole year. You know, actually try to get something scheduled ahead of time.
I like it. And, as a former student.
Yeah, right. instead of last minute, get a class up. But, you know, it's hard to schedule with all of us when you start getting that many instructors and as many matches there are. And we like to go compete too. It's a little bit hard to schedule, but we do have some dates locked down. You should be seeing those coming up here in the next few days.
Sweet.
And we do want to mention, you know, getting newer people into the sport, it'd be fun to go and watch a match, right? So if you want to come out and watch the AG Cup, definitely come out and watch. Just know that that particular match, if you are a spectator at AG Cup, you can't be behind there on glass going, man, that left to right wind sure is a, you know, really a mirage out there, you know. Like, you can't be talking about, or, you know, man, that looks wobbly for him. He should have used this bag. Like, you know, you can't be doing that. Fair. If other people hear it and then they get, you know, an indication, because the shooters are not allowed on glass while others are shooting. The way it works is they get their stage brief and then they get 2 minutes on glass that everybody stands there and you don't talk to anybody during that time, because it's their 120 seconds to look at that target, look at the wind, right?
Yeah.
And then they have to get off glass. They're not allowed to be on glass while someone is shooting, so they can't sit there and watch, you know, what the wind is doing. So you can't be back there talking about it. You also can't, you know, I think they try and keep it pretty, it's not blind stages, but they don't want everybody talking about the stages, you know, oh yeah, over there, you know, Austin cleaned this one because he did this. So
right.
Just have to be mindful if you come out. But I think that it would be neat. This is one that is fun to watch a lot of times. And towards the end, the shooters become spectators, because as someone's shooting, they're watching to see what, you know, what they're going to score, or what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Are you one that watches the scoreboard, Austin, or do you ignore it and don't want to know?
Yeah, I don't necessarily like go up and watch it every time, but I don't not watch it either. You know, I know, like, I think it was Chad said he didn't like watching the scoreboard, didn't want to know what it was, but I'll watch it, you know, just kind of see where everybody's lying. It's good to know, you know, not that it's going to change the way I shoot either way, because I'm going to try to go up to every stage and try to hit every target. So whether I'm in first or in last, my approach is going to be the same. It's going to be go try to hit all the targets. It's not like I can go, man, I really need to hit all the targets on this stage. I better just go hit them all.
Out of the four of us on this call, I think you're the most capable, though. You definitely stand a better chance of that than I do. So we've had a few live questions throughout, and we've kind of haven't hit – well, I take that back. Some of them we've answered about what you're shooting. William asks, do you think there are any benefits or detriments of being a lefty shooter?
Did he write lefty or wrong-handed?
He said lefty.
Hard to tell.
Yeah, it's called correct-handed. Thank you.
He misspoke.
It means you're in your right brain.
I don't know. You know, obviously there may be something to it. There's quite a few top shooters that are left-handed. I would say for the percentage of the population that's actually left-handed, there's a higher percentage of top shooters that are left-handed. I don't know what the advantage to it really would be. You know, we run the same gear, just on the opposite side. It probably has to do with running that right-hand, left-hand twist barrel, because the barrel, as it recoils, spins into our shoulder, not away from it, like a righty.
That's what it is.
So everybody else needs to go to, you know, a left-hand twist barrel instead of a right-hand twist barrel if you shoot right-handed. That's probably what it is.
Yep. Got to add that game left-hand twist.
Maybe there's some merit to it. I don't know, but it may just be more. It may be more the fact of the way our brains work and the way we process data, the way we process information happening in front of us. Because I'm not actually all the way left-handed. I'm amphibious. I eat left-handed, shoot left-handed, brush my teeth left-handed, but I played baseball and basketball right-handed. I roped right-handed. So it's, I don't know, maybe a, it seems like more left-handed people are able to use their right hand better than most right-handed people can use their left hand. And maybe it's, maybe we just use more of our brain.
Maybe.
Ah, I don't know.
And Travis asked, what's your favorite stage that you've shot this season?
Oh, this season? Yeah, that's kind of a tough one. Honestly, just right off the top of my head, one of my favorite stages, like setup stages, is probably stage one at Clay's. And not because we're buddies or anything. I just really enjoyed the stage. It's a troop line, but it was a very difficult troop line. It was about 100 and it's probably 160 or 70 degree pan and a five target troop line that you had to go through. You didn't, you started kind of far and came back more towards near and then ended pretty far. And so, especially when we had 35 mile an hour winds there, it was just a very difficult stage that took a lot of thought process, a lot of pre-stage prep on getting your wind angles right, and then having enough wind values to be able to make corrections off of it. So that's probably the one I enjoyed the most this year.
That sounds super fun. And I just clicked away from my notes. All right. So we got 5 minutes left because you got to load ammo. I got to load the truck. So we'll do quick questions real quick about gear. So what is your rifle?
So I run a, run an impact action Hawkins bottom metal foundation stock. I've got a tangent theta scope on top in Hawkins rings, obviously an ace muzzle brake. And then actually right now I'm running a Hawk Hill 25 cal barrel.
Awesome. I hear a lot about those ace brakes. Why don't you tell us what makes them the best brakes in the world and where can someone get one?
So you can get them on aceprecisionllc.com. You know, it's all preference, right? So we wanted to make a break that was effective but didn't put as much concussion on the shooter. You know, the angle back brakes are really efficient. They're really great at taking recoil out, but they're taxing the shoot for an entire weekend. You know, you'd finish a 2 day match, yes, going home, you'd have a headache, couldn't figure out why, you know, and I didn't like that. And you have to think it's got to be damaging, right? Because even if you have ear pro on, even if you have plugs in and you're double muffed or whatever, there's still bone conduction happening to your eardrums. And so we wanted to design something that wasn't so taxing on the shooter, that didn't put the blast back on the shooter, but kept a muzzle flat, right? So we did a flat port design straight through that's actually tilted forward slightly to direct more gas to the top ports in order to keep muzzle rise from happening. So you may get a little bit more rearward recoil, but your muzzle stays pretty flat and it stays easy to spot your shots. And so that's kind of the idea and the design behind the brake. We also have a locking collar on it that has basically indexing lines that you can set up and you can tune some of the left and right recoil out of your rifle. So say you shoot positionally and your rifle is consistently recoiling up to the left, you can actually time your brake to the left to mitigate some of that left recoil. And so you just get,
right,
you know, up recoil. So you eliminate some of the horizontal recoil, you still have your vertical recoil. And then it has set screws on it so you can take it back off, clean it, do whatever you need to do, put it back on, and it stays indexed the same.
You don't just get a new one with every barrel?
Yeah, that's the best way to do it. you know, actually, whenever, you know, about halfway through the barrel, about every 400 or 500 rounds, they get pretty dirty and you need to clean them. And it's just easier to buy a new one than clean it.
I feel that way about clothes.
Yeah, it's the old bachelor thing, right? You don't wash your socks and underwear. It's just as cheap to go buy new ones.
Oh, yep. God.
Yeah.
Don't judge, Corey.
I'm judging. Actually, I was curious, do you practice suppressed or with a brake?
Some of both. It depends. It depends if my son is in the house taking a nap or not.
Fair enough.
And so, honestly, typically when I'm breaking a barrel in or just kind of burning some time, I like to practice with a suppressor. One, you know, not that I have any neighbors. My my closest neighbor was about 300 yards away, and she moved out, so nobody lives there. So I don't really have any neighbors to worry about, but just for hearing, you know, purposes and for people in the house and for recoil management, right? Because I can take the same rifle and same setup that I normally shoot. I can throw a big fat suppressor on it and have to deal with more recoil. And so I can get used to the having to deal with some recoil management. And then whenever I go back to the break on the same setup in the rifle that I have, now I have that nice short snappy recoil and I'm actually driving the rifle and controlling the rifle a lot more. So I do like to practice. When I practice, I do like to practice with the suppressor. Now, getting ready for a match, you know, leading up to a match, getting my gun running, you know, it'll be just like it's going to be whenever it's match time. So,
sure. Yeah.
Do we have any more live?
Did anybody ask him about the Garmin Kurna? Did you get one?
I did get one. They're very, very nice. Very fast to set up. Very good. Very consistent and accurate, seemed like. It makes sense, but I would like to see the numbers on how many they actually sold in about the first 2 weeks of the release. Because it was a bunch. You know, I think everybody jumped on board on that. And rightfully so, it is a really nice tool. I can fit it in my coat pocket or my hoodie pocket and carry it. I don't have to have a big case and put it on a little tripod. And as long as you kind of point it in the right direction, picks up every shot.
Yeah, we've had a loner at our past two matches, and I think 60 guns have gone through that, and every gun is trued out to the proper velocity to hit targets, including like hunting rifles, three-gun rifles, everything I had.
Yeah, I got mine, and it's been used heavily at all of my NRL 22 matches. And then 2 weekends ago, I was out helping RO a match and kind of trying to test out our new spotting scope, digiscope adapter before AG Cup, which is sweet. And I handed my Garmin to one of my friends, and he came up to the tower with it on his wife's gun, and then they swapped it to his gun, and then like three other people just like walked up the tower, and they're like, "Oh, I got your chrono."
Yeah. Huh. Mind if I use it? It's already on my gun.
Yeah, sure, no problem. No, but it's great. It's so easy to this. It's not something you're worried about, you know, because like you can't break it. I mean, I'm sure someone can. Corey probably can.
Hey, don't try me.
Jen, I can break anything.
I can break anything.
Yeah, I mean, I think, to me, it doesn't seem like it's a device that you want to drop a lot. You know, it doesn't seem super heavy built, which makes it kind of nice because it's light and it's easy to pack. But, you know, I don't think I'd want to throw it out of the back of the pickup very many times.
Yeah, that's probably not advised.
Yeah.
So, are you bringing your shotgun for this weekend?
No, we're flying. It's going to be a miracle if we make weight anyway, as it is. So probably just renting one. Hopefully they have a left-handed shotgun for me.
Here, I'll throw one in the truck for you. Never mind, the safe's not open. I was going to pull out something.
Yeah. Yeah, bring me one. That'd be cool. I do. I really like shooting shotgun. I don't get to do it very much. It's fun. I'm not bad at it. I had a guy tell me I needed, he didn't know I shot rifle, and I was shooting a benefit Sporting Clays event one time. And he said, "Man, you should really do this professionally. You should shoot professionally." I was like, "Well, I already do, just not this." So that's exactly what I need is another shooting hobby.
Oh, but shotguns are so cheap.
Yeah. Shotgun shells, you know, that's one of those things that to me is like handgun, right? Because with a precision rifle, you can lay a precision rifle down and not shoot for 2 or 3 months and pick it up in just a few rounds. You can feel pretty brushed back up and ready to go. I don't feel like it's the same way with a pistol, and I don't feel like it's the same way with a shotgun. I feel like that's pistol something that you first. Put a lot of rounds down to stay really good at it. Mm-hmm. It's very perishable. Yeah.
The pistol skills decay faster than anything else. It's insane, and I hate it.
I agree, yeah.
Perishable skill.
Yeah.
Definitely. All right. Well, it is 9 o'clock and we promised we'd keep it an hour because everybody's getting ready to travel tomorrow, packing and all that good stuff. So I think we can wind this down to shout outs. We will start with Corey.
Okay. I have an easy one. Shout out Hawkins Precision for the sweet sweatshirt. I've worn it for like the past 3 weeks. I haven't taken anything else off. So if I could get a new one instead of washing it, that'd be great.
You could probably wash it. Yeah, you probably should. I got that you just put in the chat, Greg. But go ahead with shout outs.
All right. For me, we'll go Hunter's HD Gold. I'm going to be rocking mine this weekend and hopefully be able to see through this lovely weather we got going on out there. And PDC Customs for the beautiful rifle chassis that you don't see behind me because all my tripods are in the truck.
I know everything's packed up. We're getting ready. So if anybody doesn't know, there's my big trunk of gear back there. We will be at the AG Cup and we will be doing coverage live with live scoring. Scores will be scrolling continuously. Ultimate Ballistics is doing the scoring. So it will be, as soon as they walk off the line, it'll update. We've got some new things in the scoreboard that we'll be showing and talking about, kind of a different way to look at the scores. And we'll talk about that in the live coverage. So definitely tune in. And my shout out tonight is to Vortex, because this coverage is going to be brought to you by Vortex. So much appreciated helping us to get there. Austin, you got any shout outs?
Got all kinds of shout outs. First of all, thank you for my wife for watching our son tonight while I load ammo and while I get on this. Sometimes kids are just a handful and she does a really good job. Say hi to her. She's actually going to come out. She'll be out Friday, the AG Cup. Shout out to Impact, Tated Impact, Amy and John Kyle at Foundation, Andy and Nick at Hawkins. Those guys do a really good job of supporting everybody and hooking us all up with good clothes. Yeah. Shout out to Ace. Shout out to everybody that's rooting for me, everybody that's watching, everybody that's listening. Just remember, if you bet on me, if there's some side bets going, I get a quarter of that. That's just my cut. It's just the rules, I don't make them.
Everybody knows.
One last question to go out on. Who do you think is your biggest competition there?
Okay. Biggest competition there. That's a hard one.
Who's the one you're going to watch?
All of them. I really think, it's especially at a range that not many have shot at, especially getting to shoot on ranges. It's anybody's ball game. Cause there's guys, obviously all of us shoot well, but there's guys that typically are more favorable in different range settings, right? Different wind, different positions. If it's more positional, if it's more prone, the positions are wobbly, there's more cerebral drop to it. It starts playing into certain guys' strong suits. So it's really going to depend on how this match is set up. It's going to depend on what the wind does on who I think the competition is going to be.
Interesting.
Yeah. And all you got to do is make day three, because really turns into a one-day match. Scores start over, and just about anybody can have a day and win a one-day match.
We just wanted to know who to bet on.
Bet on me. Look, I'm going to add one to this one right here. I got to get that belt back.
Then you will have to have the briefcase to put it in.
I don't get to wear it to bed anymore. Somebody else has got it. I got to get it back.
Of course. I love that it.
Disturbing. I wonder how filthy that belt is. I know Chad wore it to work a few times when he won. Well, and was it last year or the year before we were doing interviews and Austin has the belt and he's walking by the window as I'm doing the interview in the background? Do you remember that, Austin?
Me or Bushman?
You.
It was the year before. It was the first year as at K&M when you guys did it in the office there, in the interviews in the office.
Uh-huh.
Yep. And you had the belt and you called it. So I'm trying to like be serious on camera, and here's Austin with the belt like walking.
Hey, I'm good at running distraction.
That's right. All right. Well, we look forward to seeing you, and we wish you luck at the AG Cup. I love all the guys that are shooting. Everybody is friends to me, so it's hard to root for one or the other because, like, it's just like a big family. Everybody's great. So, but anyway,
sure.
We wish you luck, and we will see you in just a couple days.
Thanks, guys. We'll see you there. Be there Thursday. I got 50 more rounds to load and bags to pack.
Oh, that's
and then maybe nice. I'll be ready to leave.
That's right.
Good luck, buddy.
All right, thanks, guys.
Well, that's a wrap for episode 425, and we will see y'all next time.